Greetings and welcome to Mers Monday, the official podcast of the Mers Political Newsletter. I'm Kyle Mullen, joined by the boss, John Rurick, Jack Spencer, Jacob Kanzler, and our special guest this week, Steve Hood from the city of Detroit, former radio host, political consultant extraordinaire. Thanks for making the journey up here, Steve.
It was a long ride. And, you know, I'm really amazed that they actually completed the Metroplex. I was looking at the traffic from Brighton all the way down to Detroit. I've never seen, I was like, why are there four lanes here? Why are there three and four lanes here? So I guess there truly is a Metroplex.
Oh,
I've never driven up here this time of day.
Well, we're glad that you made the trip up here, and your nice ride, too, by the way.
Ah, it's fun.
Yeah. You want to trade vehicles afterwards? I got the Buick over there.
No. But the police, the state police did run up on me.
Oh, did they really?
Yeah, right.
Well, you got to quit speeding.
I wasn't speeding. I was doing 70. I was with traffic, and they just ran right up on me at, Wixom? It was amazing.
Wow. Well, if you were doing 70, you might have been the only one doing 70. You might have run up on you because you weren't going fast enough.
But they profile African-Americans. You know, you get profiled, and I'm not having it. I mean, I do the speed limit most of the time, except really early in the morning or really late at night.
Maybe he was trying to figure out what your specialty plate says and what it meant. Because I'm still trying to figure it out.
It's Amistad. It's a slave ship, and we stole it.
Oh.
Didn't you read the story?
Goodness gracious.
It's a slave ship, and we stole it.
My
boat has the same name, and I get the same type of problem from the Yahoos at Coast Guard, from the Yahoos at Border Patrol. Now, Border Patrol has finally learned that they cannot outrun me, so they just wave at me. But Coast Guard, you got these Yahoos from down south. They're pulling these kids from all over the place. They pull me over on the river. You know, I've got a babe on the boat, and they'll say, okay, can we see your oil discharge plaque? You've got a plaque that you will not discharge sewage or oil overboard. All boats have it, and it's usually in the engine compartment. So I open up the engine compartment. They see the engine's all blinged out, and they're freaking out. They're freaking out, and they want to, how much horsepower do you have? Yahoos.
Yahoos. Geez, we're only 2 minutes into the podcast. I already learned something new today, Jacob.
I've learned a lot from Steve. I'm glad that he's here today, and I've learned so much just in these 2 minutes.
And this is pretty exciting. Well, let's learn
a little. You should see their reaction when they ask me what the name of the boat is. I say it's a slave ship, and we stole it. They freak out.
Geez, down south.
Down south.
Down south, I'm sure. I'm sure they do. Well, let's learn a little bit more about the elections coming up on Tuesday. Certainly some things to keep an eye on. And, Jack, I want to ask you first if there was anything in particular you were interested in seeing the results of on Tuesday night.
Well, it sounds like this marijuana-related ballot proposal down there in Detroit is going to be something to watch, apparently, with no organized opposition. Is that correct?
There is no organized opposition to Proposal A and Proposal B on the Detroit ballot.
This has to do with allowing them to build marijuana or to have marijuana dispensaries closer to schools, if my understanding is correctly?
Currently, the City of Detroit ordinance says that marijuana dispensaries can only be 1,000 feet from a school, from another dispensary, from a liquor store, from a child care center, from a drug-free zone. And they want to take that to 500 feet.
So there's actually two ballot proposals, A and B. What's the difference here?
Okay. A takes the Board of Zoning Appeals out of the issue. Okay, right now you go to Buildings and Safety. If your building is approved, okay, then you go to the Board of Zoning Appeals to get zoning approval. All right, but you have to have it within that 500 or 1,000, that 1,000-foot range, or Buildings and Safety won't do it. If it's non-conforming, then you go to the Board of Zoning Appeals. The Board of Zoning Appeals makes a determination.
Oh, so we're taking bureaucracy out of getting some marijuana dispensaries.
You're also taking public comment out, because the Board of Zoning Appeals, that's where the public comes in and argues against these things.
So that's A, and so then B moves it closer to schools and the law.
B actually puts it in line with the state, with the state's marijuana legislation that's being done now by that new board. Mm-hmm. Okay, it puts it in line with that, as I understand it.
And so who's putting these on the ballot, as far as you know, Steve?
It's an organization from outside of Detroit. See, in Detroit, you can have any initiative you want on the ballot, and you don't have to be a Detroiter to bring that initiative.
all you got to do is get the signatures, which is signatures. Like 4,000 or
right.
something.
Right, 4,000 signatures, you can do whatever you want.
Do you see this having the effect of not only allowing marijuana dispensaries to be more dense, but also would increase the number of dispensaries in Detroit?
It'll actually do two things. Actually do three things. Number one, it'll be more dense. Number two, there will be more dispensaries. Because if you look at the city's map, okay, you look at the city's map on the City of Detroit's website, DetroitMI.gov, you can type in marijuana dispensaries. It lets you put in an address. And you'll see that there are only like literally 60 areas in Detroit where you can do it, 60 places. So those are the two things that will happen. But there's a third thing. When you're a dope boy, okay, and you're selling marijuana, and you're selling marijuana to people that can go buy from a dispensary and get a card, if you've got more supply, that means you have less demand as a dope boy, which means you start fighting over turf, you start fighting more over dollars, which is a lot of the crime that we're seeing in Detroit. You have the dope boys fighting it out. And this will actually cause an increase in crime because there will be what? More opportunities for supply.
Or there could also be more opportunities to be legal. I mean, couldn't these dope boys get jobs at...
Oh, okay, you want them to be legal, huh? Well, Lara and the Michigan, the Medical Marijuana Licensing Board, have just made it so young African Americans can't get into this business. With their new income requirements to have a dispensary, it's crazy. It's effectively frozen people out. And let's say if a young man should happen to be able to show $150,000 or $500,000 in assets. Well, who's going to ask where that money's from? You know, because that's the other part of it. Where did you get that $500,000 that you're showing as an asset?
So basically, you're saying that this is big marijuana that's coming into the city of Detroit.
This is big marijuana coming into the city of Detroit.
One thing that's been discussed at the state level with the marijuana licensing boards is all the decisions they make, they're trying to make it so that there's not more money and more marijuana on the black market. Are you kind of saying that these proposals in Detroit could encourage that?
I'm saying yes. Okay, there's going to be less marijuana on the black market because more customers are going here. It's easy to get a marijuana card.
But you're voting no on this particular one.
And hell yeah, I'm voting no.
Why is that?
Because we don't need more of this in Detroit. We don't need it. It's like the liquor store. We have this proliferation of liquor stores. Right now, the alcohol licensing thing, they want to make it so you can have liquor stores outside of the half-mile rule. Okay, well, we already have that. We don't need any more density of this stuff. We don't.
So, Jacob, as we're taking a look at the ballot here, we've got the marijuana proposal here in the city of Detroit. Is there anything particular you're interested in seeing the results of?
In terms of the local ballot proposals, we always kind of track how people are doing on roads, if locals are asking for more road money, if voters are approving that road money. There's also, I think you notice, a lot of bonding proposals, certainly a lot of eye-catching dollar figures that schools and other governments, I presume, are asking for.
$1 billion for bonding this go around here when you looked at the schools and the roads and everything else.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like an attractive financing offer. I mean, sometimes voters go along with these to pay, you know, kind of get the money up front now to pay for these infrastructure upgrades. But the question is, if those things they pay for are still going to be around in the 30 years that you pay off the bond.
And I think that's why you see in bonding proposals, and we've been tracking these for a number of years, they always tend to go about 50-50. I mean, maybe slightly over 50% on bonding, but they always seem to be a high-risk role. Yeah, you get these large dollar figures in here, but a lot of times the voters just say, yeah, I don't know about that.
Yeah, and in our spreadsheet, the bonding numbers are eye-popping. I mean, in terms of what kind of money they raise. I mean, I would be safe to say that they usually raise a lot more money than any kind of tax, regular tax millage.
But if you need to build a new building, if you want to have more athletic options, if your football fields run down, what else are you going to do? It's not like you're going to take that out of your school aid fund allotment.
Exactly.
And so that's kind of the area that we're in. You know, something that I noticed here when I was doing the ballot proposals was the number of holes that we saw on the ballot. And I don't ever remember seeing this before, where we actually have candidates that are fewer than the amount of slots available. So let's say for the city of Bay City, they have this board of review and there were 9 slots on the ballot and 4 candidates. So now you have 5 people doing a write-in. And in some cases here, like in the city of Potterville and Bessemer, like Angeles, the local clerks just screwed up. And so they didn't get the filing deadline information correct. And so there are people who were going to apply weren't able to get their names in on time. But in some of these cases, there's just no interest. Like in the city of Williamston, there's a spot there that is open that nobody has applied for. Nobody has run as a write-in. Places across the state, folks are just not interested in running for a local office position.
And yeah, and you're talking about some of these boards, but I see here the no one wanted to be mayor of South Lyon.
Well, I think that was also one of those opportunities where the mayor of South Lyon said he was going to run, then he didn't run with 2 weeks left to go before the filing deadline. And in that 2 weeks, no one decided they want to step forward. But since then, we've got like 8 write-ins or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly an interesting trend that you saw across the ballots. I mean, there could be a number of reasons. The filing deadline thing certainly tripped up a lot of locals. That was one thing. But as terms of, I mean, I don't know if there needs to be more, you know, efforts by some of these local governments, the local government groups to try to recruit people. I mean, clearly these candidates are not coming up on their own. And so I know for other offices, you know, the parties tried to kind of bring people up through local office, and maybe that needs to be done to actually fill out government spots here.
All right, so John, your turn. What are you most interested in seeing the results to on Tuesday?
I'm most interested to see, and I want to ask our guest shortly to comment on this, what happens in the city of Detroit. As far as the mayor's race, how strong is Mayor Duggan's performance? Where is he standing from a power perspective at the end of this election?
Okay, well, early in the morning, before I start my day at around 4:30, 5 o'clock, I'm at a place called the Powerhouse Gym in Highland Park, Michigan. Now, the Powerhouse Gym always calls the mayor's race correctly. They've done it forever, all right? And the word from the Powerhouse Gym is they're going to go with the hoe they know, all right, which means Duggan will win. They don't want a new hoe. They want the hoe they know, which is Duggan.
But why is that? Because he's done a good job, or it's
because Coleman has done nothing but talk about race. He didn't talk about the real issues that are. He talked about poverty. He talked about downtown versus midtown, and downtown versus the neighborhoods. But he did not talk about the other issues. He did not drive home the stormwater runoff fee, which is a business killer. Okay, if he had just stuck to that. Just that one thing, and how that stupid move by the Great Lakes Water Authority, which was backed by Duggan, is actually a business killer, okay, and goes against everything. He just stuck with that. He would have been fine, but no. They had to go to the lowest common denominator, which is a race war. It's not going to work. It's not going to work unless you can actually show somebody where it's going to hit their pocketbook. All right, so they didn't do it. But by the same token, Coleman did not succeed in exciting his base. All right, yes, Detroit is 80% African-American. He did not do enough to turn them out.
But he didn't have any money, or is that not...
You can do a lot without money. Duggan's still running commercials, heavy duty, on TV at night. But Coleman could have done a lot. There could have been a lot more drum-beating, as you were, through social media, tweeting, texting, whatever. There was not enough. All right, to excite people, and people are not excited. And his performances on television have been less than lackluster. When he did the debate with Duggan, Duggan comes out and says, "How are you going to do all this stuff and you didn't show up for work 30% of the time?" Boom.
He didn't have an answer for it.
He didn't have an answer for it, and threw him off.
Right.
You know, so he just didn't do it. So Duggan's going to take it.
So do you see Duggan winning by what, 60, 70%?
I don't think Duggan crosses 58%.
Oh, really? So 58, 57 is what you're thinking.
That's what I'm thinking. Duggan and Duggan's team says, "Oh, we're going to do it by 70%. I don't see it.
Okay.
We're going to have a historically low turnout tomorrow, however, though.
All right. So getting back to John's question then, how does that translate into his power going forward? Or does it also count, or does it also depend on what happens with these city council races?
His power in Detroit or his power statewide?
Detroit.
Okay. His power in Detroit is cemented. All right. Because of the fact... There's a whole another election here. The big story is not Coleman versus Duggan. The big story is how many council races Duggan can own. If Duggan succeeds in running the table tomorrow, he will only have one council person that is not beholden to him.
Or loyal to him in some way.
To him in some way.
What are the odds of him running the table, though? I mean, your perception.
You would probably race closely.
I would give him, because it's the District 5 race, you don't know what's going to happen there. That's Mary Sheffield Jewelware. You don't know what's going to happen there. That's up in the air. I'd give him an 80% chance of doing that.
So what candidates would have to win in order for Duggan, in your eyes, to have run the table?
Spivey, Tate, Benson, Gabe Leland. Okay.
And then?
Janae Ayers. Done deal. Okay, so that's five of them, right? Five of the nine. And then Jewel Ware would have to win. Then Tyrone Carter would have to win down against Lopez in six. And the funny thing is, everybody thinks six, District 6, that's the boot of Detroit. Everybody thinks that the dominant population there is Hispanic. It's not. The dominant voting universe there is African-American. All right? No, and nobody's paying attention to that. So you got Tyrone Carter down there. Let's see. Where were we? Did I mention Spivey?
Yeah, you did.
Then you have Virgil Smith and Roy McAllister. Virgil Smith will have to win. Okay? So it takes you to eight council votes.
That would be pretty powerful then if
that
he has
a... That would be extremely powerful.
Now, would Brenda Jones still be the city council president after that election?
She, by the way it goes, she would still be council president, but Benson has been trying to lobby people to not do it. And it's possible he could remove her as council president because I believe it's a vote of the council that does it.
Brenda Jones is on the ballot, correct?
Yes, she is.
But her opposition is not very motivating here. Mary Waters and...
No, they're not. I thought Mary Waters might take out Ayers, but they haven't been able to mount a campaign. They just haven't had the money to do it. I was waiting for Sam Riddle to do some of his Riddle magic, but it didn't really turn out that way.
Sam Riddle says, has he been able to beat that, his reputation or not?
Oh, he's totally changed it. He's working hard with the National Action Network. They've stood up on a lot of stuff, and so that's gone. He's still a firebrand.
Okay.
He's still a beast, but he's beyond all that.
Is he? Okay. Mm-hmm.
And the big final question is, will Duggan run for governor?
I think he'll have to. I think it'll either be he or Figer that has to step in. Whitmer can't win it.
You don't think Whitmer will be able to beat Bill Schuette?
No. No way.
Why not? Why is she not connecting with the city of Detroit?
Because she does stupid things. Like walking into the 14th district, the most diverse district, with a whole bunch of white people and no blacks on her team. Stupid stuff like that. And her speech is just, it's not inspiring.
What about if Andy Levin were to get in the race? Is that a starter at all? Does that help matters?
I don't think it helps matters at all.
Okay. So we need a Mike Duggan or a Jeffrey Figer, really.
That's right, to get to have a Democratic win. Now, what else is interesting, we talk about Duggan. I look at the proposed cuts in the budget. If Trump signs that budget and the $6 billion worth of cuts are still there to HUD, Detroit is in horrible shape and it becomes really hard to run. And I don't know if he wants to do that. I mean, it becomes a bear.
Explain to our listeners what that would mean. So that means less money going to help rebuild the low-income housing in the city
right.
of Detroit.
Less money to help rebuild low-income housing. Less money for vouchers for people. Okay, the HUD vouchers. Less money for rehab. Less money for some of the demolitions. Not all that demolition money came from TARP. Some of that came from HUD.
Question on Duggan. I'm not sure if this would be an issue if he were to run, but how would he explain himself after taking such a hard position publicly to not run?
If he were to run,
he was very candidly saying, I will not run for governor, and getting indignant about it. Does he need to explain himself if he were to run?
He'll just say, I need to. I have to. We have to take back the state. That's what this whole insurance game was about. The only reason he would go for this insurance game, I believe, this whole insurance bill, only reason he would go for it in the face of the whole Democratic caucus saying no. It wasn't just the Detroit caucus. It was the Democratic caucus said, we don't like this thing. He went ahead with it anyway. That was to show that he could appeal to statewide people. And it was a statewide bill because it really wasn't going to benefit Detroiters. All right? Yeah, we'd get to choose from tiers, but did it deal with the central question of redlining? No. So that means a Gross Pointer would still pay lower insurance than a Detroiter, even though they're separated by a block.
You mentioned Virgil Smith and Roy McAllister just a minute ago, but let's talk about that race a little more. Is it possible Virgil Smith could actually win and become a member of the city council?
Kwame Kilpatrick won a second term after all that trouble he was in.
So what would you put the odds? 50, 60% that Virgil wins?
70.
You think he's the favorite?
Oh, yeah. Forgiveness and that name.
And he's and I know Virgil Smith. I'm sure he's working hard.
Oh, he's going crazy. But so is Roy McAllister.
Is he? Okay.
McAllister is an Energizer bunny. He's a great guy. But there's a whole lot of forgiveness. And the Smith name from his father on down has a lot of pull in District 2.
And he's very sharp, and he can always play that. Mm-hmm. He's been up front on the auto insurance debate.
He can play that he's been up front and on top of it.
Yes.
Okay. But the other thing to watch in that race is another factor. There's the George Cushenberry write-in.
Okay. Oh, there's going to be some of that.
George is writing himself in, so that could take votes away from McAllister.
Because otherwise it would be the anti-Virgil Smith vote would just go to Roy McAllister.
That's right.
Is that George Cushenberry really wanting to win, or is that a tactic?
That's George Cushenberry needing a job. You got to remember, he was garnished while he was at city council. What are they going to garnish if you can't practice law?
Can he still practice law? Did he?
I don't think he ever got his license back, did he? Right, and so I don't know what he's going to do for a living. I don't know where these people are going to get their money from that were taking, they were garnishing his check at the city council.
What, maybe he'll have to run for the state senate then in 2018? I guess we'll have to find out.
Okay, we're talking, you said low turnout again in the city election. We know about the turnout in the 2016 presidential election. It was one of the places in the country that had a lot to do with the ultimate turnout of the race. Mm-hmm. What's going to make a city like Detroit have a good, solid, high turnout? What kind of election is going to propel that into looking ahead at future elections? Who's going to excite them? What kind of candidate? What kind of situation?
Okay, let's say Duggan ran again. You'd have to have somebody that would excite the base to come out and say we need a change, to be a candidate of change, a true change agent. And there's nobody on the horizon. See, the problem that Detroit's really facing is that the candidate pool is small because so many people, so many of the African-American middle class and upper class, have moved to Oakland County. They simply just don't live there. And the people that do live there are beholden to who? Duggan. That's why they're not, that's why nobody showed up. Now, the guy to watch in the next one, even though some people say he's beholden to Duggan, the guy to watch in the next race is Garland Gilchrist, the guy that's running for clerk.
He's done a heck of a job in that race, hasn't he?
He's done a great job in that race. He's done a great job in that race, but he's the guy to watch. He's a guy with a little bit more tutelage that could inflame people towards change.
Speaking a little bit more to your comment about voter turnout, if Duggan is on the ballot next year as a gubernatorial candidate, mm-hmm. would that excite and drive up Detroit participation above and beyond? I mean, what kind of percentage are we talking difference between him and, say, a Whitmer or a...
It drives it more because they know him. Mm-hmm. Okay, it'll turn it out a little bit more. But with Duggan on the ballot, it potentially gets those Republicans that went for Trump to come back to the Democrats. And it does it because they look at what I've done for Detroit, how I've revitalized Detroit. And truth be told, from the white perspective on the outside, he has revitalized the hell out of Detroit. Have you been down to Little Caesars Arena,
that whole area?
Beautiful. Oh, it's beautiful.
I mean, if you don't live in Detroit, you're like, this is the guy. I mean, he's got building commercials all over the place.
And you've got that new line that goes right down Woodward, too.
Let's not talk about that.
I'm sure you've driven it. It's vital to your transportation needs, isn't it?
Oh, it's a killer on P-Zeros. I hate driving my tires across that thing.
Oh.
It's like... And then the thing, instead of being a normal line where it goes straight down the street, it goes off to the side. Why wouldn't you have the thing run down the middle?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm a reporter. I'm not the engineer.
I can't wait till this winter. Okay, if we have a serious snow, we heard Skubik say he's going to get snow tires, right? If we have a serious snow, that Q line is done.
Okay. That thing's going to get buried in the snow. You're calling it right now.
It's just going to get
Steve, put a snow plow in the front of it.
There you go. Doesn't make any damn sense.
Jack, before we go, I did want to ask you about the 109th State House District, because this is really becoming a bit of a battleground for Republicans and Democrats. Republicans are actually spending money up in Marquette to try and win that seat for Rich Rossway. And the Democrats are a little scared. Can you imagine a seat that has been Democratic since the days of Jacob Eddy, the days of Dwight Eisenhower, going into Republicans' hands?
Well, we know the demographic changes that have taken place in north of Clare, of Highway 10, and then even more so up there in the UP. I just think that you're going to see more of this opportunism by Republicans in these areas that have been changing.
What a downer that would be for Democrats to lose that race, the national momentum behind them of this anti-Trump phenomenon, and then to go into the first competitive House race since 2016 and to lose that. That would be kind of a punch in the gut for Democrats or not.
Yeah, I don't know about the... I'm not sure I think there's going to be a massive anti-Trump response. I think that remains to be seen. I think it's a flip-the-coin situation right now.
In the 109?
He's not on the ballot. I just don't know if there's this... If they're expecting a big anti-Trump swing... I'm not even that positive the Democrats are expecting that.
Well, I think that the 109th will give us our first early taste of that anyway, in an area that, in general, went in favor of Donald Trump in 2016.
Okay. Are you guys going to cover the Michigan State Central Committee meeting, Democratic Central Committee, this week? I mean, there are going to be some fireworks there, I mean, because of this Donna Brazile stuff. Real, real fireworks.
What are you expecting to see there?
I expect the Sanders people to rise up and act. It just be very disruptive.
Because they feel like they were never given a fair shot. That's here, right. That the fix was in from the
That's
get-go?
Right. Yes, exactly.
Was the fix in from the get-go?
I think it was. I really do.
And why? Just because because Hillary Clinton was the establishment?
Because she was the establishment. That's the exact reason. And you couldn't. The only reason that Sanders won... It's because they couldn't poll the people. They didn't know what those kids were going to do. That was a youth vote. And what, he won by 30,000 votes or something like that? It was that youth vote that you couldn't control through the party establishment.
Yeah. And what Steve was just talking about is exactly why I'm saying I'm not that sure at all that even the Democrats are absolutely sure there's going to be a big anti-Trump turnout, because the Democrats have this equally divisive problem in their lapse.
And so you got to wonder, are they going to rise up in opposition to this, or are they just going to...
It's not about the voting. It's about who stays home.
Exactly. That you don't feel like your vote matters. Why does it matter? Because the fix is in, so forget it.
Yeah, and I just think it's awfully hard. And again, as I said last week on the podcast, the gauges we used to look at and used to expect were all so wrong in 2016, it's awfully hard to trust them again. You know, you look at that thermometer, and that thermometer was wrong yesterday. How much are you going to trust it today?
It makes you think about your Mark Grebner quote that you love to pull out there.
Yeah, he talked about one particularly bad poll in MERS. You can find it someplace where he said you could have gotten a better polling result by studying the entrails of a dead goat.
It wasn't our poll, though, that he had that comment on, though.
No, this was...
Yeah, of course not. We would not sponsor something of that
quality. That was inside Mission Problem.
But let's go back to Jack's point just for a second. You know, there's not going to be an anti-Trump sentiment yet, because the things that hit the pocketbook of the normal people haven't happened yet. The Medicaid cuts haven't happened yet. The real effect of what's going on with our health care right now hasn't really hit them yet. That doesn't happen until January. Okay, so all they see is a stock market that's at higher levels, more jobs, okay, you know, 4.1% unemployment. That's all they see. So why would there be, I mean, unless you're feeling it, why would there be an anti-Trump sentiment? There wouldn't be. I mean, there's
unless you were really upset that Trump won and you didn't vote, or you didn't feel like you did enough to counteract that. I mean, that's what we saw here at this women's rally on January 15, when we had this enormous turnout of folks. We saw that backlash, but has that anger been a long anger, or has that been a short anger? And I think we may find out a little bit more about which one it was on Tuesday. All right. Well, Steve, thanks for driving up here and risking racial profiling and the whole bit to take your Mustang up.
Etui's occupation force.
Jeez. Well, thanks.
Where's your headquarters down that way?
Yeah, I think it's over in Diamonddale now.
Oh, good.
They had to move it. And that's not on your way.
I'm just going to go straight out past the land of Etui.
There you go.
Is that how you pronounce her name?
Etu.
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 Yeah.
Same time.
Thanks for driving. And Jack, of course. John, it's glad to see you back again after your journey around the United States. It was
with two weeks of touring the South and New Orleans. We had
jazz, we hit the blues, we hit all sorts of good music and some good food.
Do you have any cops pull you over? Search your vehicle?
I did not, but I drive slow. I drive an old lumbering truck. Nobody really pays much attention to me. Now, if I had a sexy car like a Mustang, I might get pulled over.
Yes, with an odd vanity plate on it that you're not quite sure what it is, but
right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. You see the vanity plate I get for the other car.
Ooh. We'll have to take care of that in the next podcast.
IBHNIC.
Jacob, and thank you for coming. Till next week, I'm Kyle Mullin. Take care.